Hello, and welcome back to the Glossy Week in Review podcast. I'm your host, senior fashion reporter Danny Parisi, and I'm here with our international reporter, Zofia Zviglinska. Hello, Zofia.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. How are you?
Yeah, good. Just coming back from basically a bad sinus infection. So
me
really
too,
glad
actually.
To be getting out the woods.
Oh, I didn't realize that it's you were... Worst. Yeah, me too. You could probably hear it in my voice. That's not going to stop us from reviewing the week on the Week in Review podcast, which is what we do. So this week, we're going to talk about Allbirds and their precarious stock situation. We'll talk about Hermès and some of the cool watch stuff that came out of Watches and Wonders, which is happening right now from Hermès. And then finally, we're going to talk about the new Beyoncé album and the kind of like impact it's having on Levi's and also cowboy culture and all that kind of stuff, which I don't know about you, Zofia. I just searched Beyoncé and cowboy in my email and I got so many pitches related to cowboy craze is happening all over because of Beyoncé. We'll talk about that at the end of the episode. But let's start with Allbirds. So we've talked about Allbirds a few times on this podcast about the kind of state of that brand. They used to be one of, I would say, the darlings of the DTC kind of era, 2010s, but they've really struggled the last couple of years in the 2020s. Since it went public in 2021, the share price has fallen like 90% or 95%, something like that. They IPO'd at $2 billion and are now worth like $100 million, which is just an insane decline. And then this week, they were notified by NASDAQ, where they're publicly traded, that if they continue to trade below $1 per share, which is where they are right now, they're at risk of being delisted. Basically, they've got 6 months to get their stock up to more than $1 per share for 10 consecutive days. There's a long process before they'll actually get delisted. It could be anywhere up to a year, depending on if they get extensions and stuff. But it is a real possibility, and I think it's a testament to just how kind of dire things have gotten for them. Their CEO, who's also their co-founder, Joey Zwillinger, he stepped down last year. They have a new CEO. They've got a new turnaround plan, all this stuff to try to kind of make up for those, you know, the massive decline. I think they're really kind of in a tough and interesting state. I've got some thoughts on how they got there and what happens next, but how about you go first, Zofia? What do you make of the situation they're in?
Yeah, I mean, for me, Allbirds, you know, was one of the kind of D2C sustainability darlings, like initially when they came out. I think they were one of the first proponents to start using, you know, all of these kind of innovative materials in their footwear. And since then, I feel like they've basically not had as strong a product proposition, and therefore, like, the sales haven't grown, even though, like, they did expand, they had that store presence. You know, obviously the pandemic affected them quite badly. I think it's just, yeah, seeing if they'll be able to do equally interesting things in, like, the sustainability space is what I'm kind of focusing on, and obviously if they survive.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that part of the problem I diagnosed is that I think their core product, which is the wool runner and, like, these running shoes, which are kind of just look like running shoes and weren't for a while actually really functional as running shoes, although they tried to kind of break into that. The core product, I think, you know, it had the sustainability element that a lot of people liked, but it kind of aesthetically, I think, fell out of style. And then they, you know, so that core product wasn't selling as much. And then they tried to kind of introduce new categories. They did athletic wear for a little while. Like I said, they introduced a new version of the shoe that was, like, geared for actual running. I don't think either of those really took off that well. The athletic wear line, I know, is discontinued now. So now they had a core product that wasn't selling and new product that they spent money on also not selling. And I think those two things combined to kind of put them in a really bad situation. I also feel like it's a good example of a brand going public and it sort of being disastrous for them because, you know, I don't know if they would be in the situation if they were still private. They probably wouldn't be as big. They also might not be in, you know, doing as poorly as they are right now. So it kind of feels like going public is a double-edged sword sometimes. Like, if you have, I feel like you should have a company that can survive a couple of bad quarters. And when you're in the public view like this and every bad quarter is, like, scrutinized and talked about on podcasts like this and stuff, you know, I feel like that can't be good for navigating how to, like, turn that around in addition to having all this, like, public stress or public pressure at the same time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that the issues with Allbirds for me actually kind of come down to marketing and style more than anything else. Like, I feel like the product is good, but like the reason why it doesn't have like maybe as much selling power as other products is just because like that marketing language is too weak and like the brand identity is too weak now. I feel like they need to kind of really lean into making it cool. I think it's always been a little bit not. I think that's where the like appeal just isn't there. Like, you see other brands either in like the athletic space or the sustainability space doing better, like Vuori or On Running, like having a really clear kind of design aesthetic that goes along with like their retail presence, their products. I think with Allbirds, it was all very, very like minimalist, but at the same time, just not like minimalist enough to kind of sell it as like a purely minimalist brand, if you know what I mean.
I do. I feel like their aesthetic for a long time was just shoe, you know. It's just a shoe. Yeah, I think that's a part of it. And I felt even from the beginning, they had this association as like the corporate guy's shoe, you know. It was like, I felt like you wince at that. Yeah, it's it was like the VP of sales is wearing Allbirds or whatever. No offense to VP of sales, but it's like a, I don't know, it was associated with kind of a boring like professional type of person. Again, no offense to those people, but I just feel like that can only last so long, you know. And it's not boring in the sense of like, well, it's not flashy but it works. It's like boring in that there's not really much going on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. And I think that's interesting because like as soon as brands start to think that like their product is doing well with that kind of customer, unless they're literally just purely an athleisure brand and they don't mind it, they end up distancing themselves away. Like Patagonia did that with their vests. Like they basically said, like, we're not making these. This is like not the kind of product we want to be making. Like, that's it. We don't want to be doing this. I think that Allbirds needs to basically like separate itself from that like perception, like public perception.
But I don't know where they go because like Patagonia had this sort of like outdoorsy hiking granola type thing to fall back on. And I don't really know what Allbirds has other than that kind of identity. It's funny because actually last week, Jill and I were talking about Express. Express was in a similar situation with their share prices where they were at risk of being delisted and then they were ultimately delisted. And we talked about the same thing of just not really knowing what the Express identity is. And I kind of feel the same way about Allbirds. So interesting that they're in the same kind of position. And then I should also say, speaking of Express, when Express was in the same situation with being potentially delisted, one of the things they did was a reverse stock split, which is basically when you combine your total shares into fewer but more valuable shares. So technically they're worth more than a dollar. It's kind of like an artificial way to immediately make all the shares more valuable by like combining them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It staves off that threat of being delisted kind of in an artificial hacky way, but it could, I mean, it didn't work for Express, but it could at least give them the time to, you know, do whatever kind of turnaround they want to do. And speaking of that turnaround, we should say that they are closing stores, they've done layoffs, they're cutting costs and stuff. So like there is movement happening. They know that they need to change things. But I think the product is the biggest question mark, and I don't know what their plan is there, and I don't even have an idea of how they would fix that. Like, I feel like they'd have to start from scratch. Maybe they just go private again and like kind of rework things, but I'm not sure exactly how that would work.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know, this is an absolutely like crazy idea, but I feel like they would have to go the route of like brands like Veja and like premiumize their sneakers and make it like go into repair and like focus on that aspect of sustainability. Because like if you think about it, the sneaker space, you know, with like Veja, for example, like it's mostly focused on like lifestyle sneakers. There's a bit of like a white space for sneakers which are kind of repairable and good for the planet that are also kind of premium and definitely kind of more focused on that athletic market. So maybe that's something that they could go into. If they do go into that, I want dibs on stock options, please.
Yes. Okay, let's move on and talk about Hermes. So Watches and Wonders is happening right now in Geneva. I would love to go to Watches and Wonders someday. For now, I just have to watch from afar. And there's a lot of always like cool news coming out of it. It's cool to see what the brands are doing. One thing I wanted to focus on for this Watches and Wonders is Hermes. They announced a new line of mechanical women's sport watches coming out soon. They're very high end and are kind of meant to compete more directly with, you know, dedicated watch brands like Rolex. I think Hermes is really interesting because they're what I think you would call like a fashion watch brand. They make really nice watches. They've done it for like 50 years. I think their first watch was made in the 70s. They're expensive and they're nice and they're luxury. They're all these things. But there's a little bit in watches of a divide between like a very nice fashion watch and then like a true Swiss like watch like Rolex or Patek Philippe or something like that. So even though Gucci or Chanel or whoever make really nice watches, I think to like the real watch heads, there's a little bit of a line between that and then like Audemars Piguet or something like that. But recently, I feel like we see some luxury brands like Hermes, Louis Vuitton is the other big one, trying to like worm their way in there. Basically, they keep like reducing the number of watches they make and elevating the price and the quality in the hopes of kind of like getting in there, which is really tough, but it's interesting to see Hermes kind of trying. And Hermes is, you know, so successful and so huge that they've got the resources to do it. But it's a very difficult prospect, I think, to like actually get on the same level as like a Rolex or something. So I've got more thoughts on it, but I'll stop there. What do you think on Hermes's new sport watches and that whole movement?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that watches are always an interesting category for luxury brands to go into because you'd think it's a very kind of natural segue into, you know, another luxury product category. But because of, you know, the kind of cult following and like all of the different communities that have grown in the watch community, like over the last couple of years, it's kind of evolved into this own thing where watches is basically almost a separate category, kind of similar to the way you'd think about like luxury brands doing like alcohol. It's a different category from product from like apparel, and like even footwear I'd say is still kind of linked to apparel. You end up having collections and the same thing, but watches can have, you know, their own creative direction, completely different styling compared to like the mainline collections, and also just present a very like interesting opportunity for like tech innovation. Like that's always been something that has been growing, like, you know, all of the different speed and movement like improvements that make people go crazy. Actually, I was just talking about that with my husband about the Grand Seiko and how it has like a specific movement that makes it the same as like an Audemars Piguet. So shout out there. But I think for luxury brands, it's basically just a new way of getting into the market. I'm wondering how they're able to do it in an authentic way, because even though people might know these brands, they're not really watch brands. And I think that makes a big difference. Like you can probably bring in the right people, like expert wise, to create really great watches. But I feel like without that heritage, it might fall short on those kind of typical watch customers that buy, you know, hundreds of watches every year.
Yeah. Well, first off, your husband has great taste because Grand Seiko does make amazing watches and they are really good. and I totally think they're on the same level as like the really good Swiss brands. But I think you're completely right. I think watches seem adjacent, and they definitely are adjacent to other luxury categories. But at the same time, it's kind of a whole different category. Just like the level of expertise and heritage and just history that a lot of the like real true watch brands have, like Hermes has been making watches since the 1970s, but Audemars Piguet has been making watches since like the 1870s. It's just a whole, like, it's a categorical difference, kind of. That being said, Hermes is huge. Louis Vuitton is another one that's doing something very similar, where they're really trying to elevate their watch business to be on the same level as the big Swiss brands. They have, you know, I've actually talked to several people in the watch industry about this, and a lot of people have said kind of the same thing. They said basically, if anyone could do it, Louis Vuitton can do it, because they've got the money, they've got the like resources to get the best watchmakers in the world. They can do it. It's just, even for Louis Vuitton or and even for Hermes, it's going to be slow. It takes a long time to kind of like work your way in there and to shed whatever reputation you had before and take on a new one. That just takes a while. I think the best example that I've heard, again, from talking to people, a lot of different watch companies, the one brand that I think has successfully done that is Montblanc, which is known for pens originally and now is, you know, and has been making watches for a long time. But I think in the last couple decades has actually successfully gotten itself to be considered on par with other like traditional Swiss watch brands like Patek Philippe or something. It's really, it took them a long time. They also were coming, I think, from not from apparel or leather goods, but from pens, which is a mechanical kind of like hard good. So maybe they already had like a reputation for making really high quality kind of instruments, basically. Whereas a brand like Hermes is known for its leather goods, amazing leather goods, but that's just a different kind of area. So anyway, long story short is I do think that Hermes could probably get there. I think Louis Vuitton can get there, but I think it's going to be a little while before like the true watch snobs maybe can consider them to be on the same level. Any other thoughts that you have on Hermes before we move on?
Yeah, I think the last thing I wanted to mention was that, you know, the watch customer is changing. Like there's so many more kind of younger collectors now that look at the kind of style element of a watch almost as much as like those traditional elements that made people watches buy before. So, you know, the time keeping kind of quality, you know, with all of the things with like depth and like people being able to dive really deep with watches, like all of those kind of very technical qualities. And I think that now that, you know, you've got Gen Z customers and like younger customers looking to these brands and kind of knowing them better, it might actually be like the perfect time for them to come into them because these people have grown up with these brands and they might be able to understand that, you know, because the watch collective is changing, therefore, you know, that also means that the brands there are going to be different. But there'll still always be like the very classic collectors that will look to just pure watchmaking brands for like the best timepieces. I think it just, yeah, I think it will change. It's just some of it might end up looking a little bit different because there's a lot more younger customers there.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. I do think that even younger collectors are learning from older collectors about what's worth collecting and stuff. So I think that some of the reputation still gets passed down. But you're totally right. I mean, I think a lot of young watch enthusiasts now would be very happy to, you know, have a Louis Vuitton watch and don't have quite the same level of opinion that maybe older collectors do that it's not, you know, a real Swiss watch or something. Yeah, it's a super interesting category. I've been writing a ton about watches on Glossy recently and will continue to do so. So we'll probably talk about them more on this podcast as well. Let's talk about our final topic, a little bit less businessy, but so I mentioned this at the beginning. Beyonce had Cowboy Carter just come out. I gotta admit, I have not listened to it fully yet. I've heard a couple songs, but the main thing that I keep hearing from like I said, I searched my inbox for just Cowboy Beyonce and I got 10 million pitches about it, is that it's creating this huge moment for like cowboy apparel, cowboy hats, cowboy boots, stuff like that. Specifically, there's a song on the album called Levi's Jeans, which from what I have heard from a couple of sources, you know, immediately led to a big increase in sales for Levi's. Their CEO, Michelle Gass, talked about it on their earnings. I think if you're a marketer, and like if you work at a brand and then Beyonce makes a song that's just called the name of your brand, that's got to be the most insane moment. Like, I don't even know, like you must be freaking out and popping champagne when that happens.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can't imagine there's many examples of brands being mentioned in like the titles. I know that like Gucci always seems to come up in songs themselves, but like, I don't think anyone's actually named it Gucci, from what I understand. But yeah, no, I think the cowboy craze is about to pop off. And I think the fashion briefing that I did last week had some edited data around like that a lot of the trends related to kind of cowboy styling are already starting to see like a pickup in sales because of both the aesthetic of the album cover, which was released, I think, a couple of months ago. There was already some shoots that Beyonce's done. So I think that it's something that might play into those trends. It still definitely doesn't beat out like the kind of Swiftie level mania that is happening, but I think it's very much going to affect like the fashion stuff. And you know, to be honest, even before Beyonce, like you had LVMH doing a lot of different kind of cowboy themed looks in the fall winter last year.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, then so I think there was, that's been a thing.
Yeah, there was also the cowboy outfit from Barbie. There's like, I mean, I think I wrote something a couple months ago about Yellowstone has been hugely popular. I've never seen it, and I don't know anybody who watches it, but I know a lot of people do. So it feels like cowboy kind of Western stuff has been building up slowly the last couple months, and then this album came out and kind of made it happen. So, but I also wonder if it's one of those things where if you didn't already have some cowboy stuff in the works, it's like maybe too late now to jump on it. Just, I don't know, trend cycles happen so fast. I often wonder, and I've asked a couple brand, you know, marketer people about this, like, is it worth it trying to jump on something when it happens? Or is it sort of like you should have been working on it already a couple months ago? I guess it depends on your turnaround time and stuff. But I don't know, sometimes something like this happens and I'm like, do you just skip this one? Cause like it's already happening and you missed it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think unless you've got a brand which is kind of tied to Americana or like that kind of, I don't know, Southern identity, I feel like it's a bit of a stretch to just start launching stuff unless you're like a fast fashion brand and can kind of turn it around within a couple of weeks. But I think that most of the time the brands that are kind of really winning with this are ones which have like very strong heritage and ties to that. So Levi's obviously makes sense. I think that one of our co-writers wrote something about Stenson, which does the cowboy hats that were featured for Beyonce, and I think they've seen like an uplift in sales. So I think it'll be kind of those staples, like the cowboy hats, the jeans, you know, the kind of cowboy boots that have like a kind of longer history as well, that will do really well.
Yeah, I think so. The ones that are kind of authentic and it makes sense, as opposed to just suddenly being like, we're also a cowboy brand now. Yeah. it's funny. I was thinking about this earlier when we were talking about Allbirds. I'm kind of like, if only they could get Beyonce to make a song called Allbirds, you know, maybe all their problems would be fixed. But it might be.
Oh my God.
It might be too late for that.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's all the time we have this week, but this was so great. Thanks for being here, Zofia. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
For those of you listening, don't forget to give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to this. That helps us out so much. And don't forget to subscribe to the Glossy Podcast, because you'll hear interviews with industry insiders every Wednesday and week interview episodes with me every Friday. Until then, thanks for listening.